Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Mae Martin, Andy Zaltzman, Jess Robinson and Luke Kempner. And this is...
The Noel Show!
Thank you very much. Very nice to be back. The news has gone absolutely mad at the moment, so much that we don't even notice anymore. Last week, Labour lost a by-election to the Tories in an area of Cumbria which hasn't had a Tory MP since it was part of the supercontinent Pangaea. They did win a by-election in Stoke, although with a reduced majority and under controversial circumstances.
And I hereby declare the Labour Party candidate as Member of Parliament for Stoke Central.
I'm sorry, there's been a mistake. The winner is Moonlight.
Now, the Copeland result was the first time a governing party has gained a by-election for 34 years, leading to worries that Labour will lose the next general election if no changes are made.
But frankly, nothing is going to shift Jeremy Corbyn short of putting the directors of Leicester City in charge of the Labour Party. UKIP thought they'd win, but they didn't, and it seems possible that they have outlived their reason for existing.
Yes, we've had a referendum. Your raison d'etre is no more. I just thought I'd use the phrase raison d'etre while it's still legal. Corbyn, Nuttall. The thing is, these remarkable stories just drift past us now. Nothing surprises us since the news is so bizarre anyway. Sometimes I don't know how the news readers manage to maintain their composure while they read it out.
North Korea has carried out an assassination with the deadly nerve agent VX in a public airport. Say what? The assassination was carried out by two women who thought it a reality TV prank. You're yanking my chain. They did it by holding handkerchiefs to his face. Oh, you're just trolling me now. Whoever's on this auto queue tonight is off their tits on something. If I get any more weird stuff like this, I am out of here. And in other news, President Trump delivered a sober and conciliatory speech. Right, that's it.
The North Korean assassination in broad daylight in public on CCTV was jaw-dropping. The puzzle was, if the chemical is so deadly, how come the assassin didn't die too?
Oh, you see, that's why there were two assassins. Each carried a precursor chemical which needs to combine with the other in order to become deadly. Each wiped their cloth on the victim's face in turn, and then they escaped.
And the plan would have worked completely if they hadn't high-fived each other in the car park. In the car park afterwards. Another weird thing about the news is the way that it throws people together who don't normally belong in the same sentence.
Yes, this week, for example, Rory McIlroy was criticised for playing a round of golf with the US president. It was just jealousy, though, really. There's a lot of people who'd like close access to Donald Trump while holding a golf club in their hands. The critics, though, said playing golf with him was endorsing his policy.
Rory said,
to go there and see 30 Secret Service and snipers in the trees, it was just a surreal experience.
Especially since they were Russian Secret Service. Anyway, they didn't talk about politics, apparently. Trump talked about golf courses at resorts he's developing, and Rory told him about the Santander 123 account. And how he could apply for it online. But I wouldn't trust those snipers.
No, you'd want to be careful. In France this week, President Hollande was speaking when a sniper shifted position on a nearby roof and his rifle accidentally went off, shooting a nearby waiter in the leg.
Now, fortunately, he wasn't badly hurt, but honestly, how French is that? In what other country in the world, when a gun goes off by mistake, is it statistically likely to hit a waiter? I'm also willing to bet that he took it very differently to a British waiter. If it happened here, the news would go...
The victim said he intended to sue the police for negligence and would be demanding compensation.
In France, the news will go...
The victim said that in many ways, the experience served as a metaphor for life. The bullet representing fate itself, its trajectory a product of 1,000 random occurrences that cannot be predicted. He also apologised for spilling the soup.
Meanwhile... Meanwhile, Trump himself gave a speech to Congress this week, and everyone was surprised that he sounded reasonable and moderate. Even if he does treat public speaking like he's a guest on The Unbelievable Truth, you have to try and spot the handful of facts sneaked into all the stuff that he's made up. But why is anyone surprised? He's a businessman and he says what the customer wants to hear.
You see, I think the refreshing thing about having a non-politician in charge is that it's all new to him. He often sounds like a five-year-old. You know the way kids always want to tell you about things they've just learned? Well, he sounds exactly like that. A few weeks ago, he said,
"You know what uranium is, right? It's this thing called nuclear weapons and other things. Like, lots of things are done with uranium, including some bad things."
And he went on to say that his dad had some uranium, and it was true, and it was in the garage. But like any kid, Donald is wide-eyed when he finds out something new to him. One of my favourite things he said recently was this:
"Nobody knew healthcare could be so complicated."
Literally everybody knew that. It's quite endearing, really, the way Donald is constantly amazed by things he's only just found out. You never know what it's going to be next.
"My fellow Americans, nobody knew that to make a baby, the man has to put his willy into the lady. And other things. Like, lots of things are done with willies, including some bad things."
Now, what interests me about Trump coming to Britain is that he watches television obsessively all the time and then tweets on the basis of what he's just seen. And he won't have any of his usual stuff to watch. He'll be in his hotel room watching Mrs. Brown's Boys, tweeting,
"Brits find amusement in immigrant family headed by transvestite. This is why we must put America first."
You'll be able to spot when he's been watching Pointless.
"Failing contestant trying to name naturally occurring radioactive elements had never heard of uranium. Sad."
Then maybe he'll catch a bit of Holby City.
"Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated."
The thing is that in this era of fake news, there are loads of things we keep being told as facts, which just aren't.
But nobody cares about statistics or facts anymore, and the news just seems more and more extreme and worrying.
Go back 10 years and Question Time was like,
"I'd like to ask the panel what they think about traffic cones." "Okay, traffic cones. Would you like to take that one, Peter?"
Certainly. "Well, I think traffic cones are absolutely marvellous."
"Marvellous, marvellous. And what about you, Jane?"
"Oh, well, I'm afraid I don't agree. I think there are too many traffic cones, but I do respect your opinion."
Nowadays, however, in the post-Trump, post-Brexit era, it's become more like this.
"Does the panel agree with me that traffic cones are too liberal and their bright colouring and their pointy shape might turn our children gay?" "Shut it, snowflake! Go and eat a straight banana, you libtard feminazi!"
I'll have to stop you there and remind you that we have snipers in position in case of trouble.
Sadly, they're French.
And now, from the part of North America that doesn't look embarrassed when you ask who their leader is, please welcome back Canadian comedian Mae Martin.
After just 2 months in office, it's already getting difficult to satirize the Trump administration. People are getting increasingly resigned to the apocalypse. I spoke to my mum, Wendy, on the phone after his most recent speech. And I was like, "Oh, what'd you think?" And she just goes, "Oh, well, I've stopped going to the gym." I was like, "What? Why?" She goes, "Well, I think when the world is on fire, Zumba's going to seem like a supreme waste of time." I was like, "Oh, God." But there's a specific issue that I think it is important to pick apart. It's one close to my heart. On February 22nd, the Trump administration announced that it would withdraw Obama's bill, which allowed transgender students to use the bathrooms in their schools that match the gender that they identify with. Repealing this might not seem like a huge deal, but it's a step backwards. It's worth examining. Trans issues, like BBC Gardener's World magazine's recent special on roses, are a thorny issue. Thanks, guys. Why are people so insistent that the bathrooms we use must match our biological gender? An argument that comes up a lot is that it's for the safety of women, to protect us from all these imagined hordes of violent, pedophilic, transgender people desperate to sneak into our toilets. Ted Cruz recently tweeted,
"We shouldn't be putting little girls alone in a bathroom with grown men. That's just a bad, bad, bad idea."
It's a sentiment that comes up all the time. An attorney from Florida called Anita Staver tweeted that she now wants to take a gun into the bathroom to protect her from perverts. Have you ever gone into a public toilet and been in a situation where you thought, God, I could use a gun? A magazine, maybe, or a toilet brush, yes, but what are the actual facts? The NCTE, the Human Rights Campaign, and the American Civil Liberties Union found zero statistical evidence that there have been any documented prosecuted assaults in toilets by trans people. In fact, historically, and this is my favorite fact of all time, more Republican politicians have been arrested for sexual misconduct in bathrooms than trans people. I Googled it for literally half an hour and came up with three cases of this. A congressman, a senator, a state representative. They've all been fully arrested for sexual misconduct in public toilets. On the other hand, 70% of transgender people in Washington report themselves being verbally harassed or physically assaulted in public bathrooms. I find this easy to believe because I'm a girl. I'm not transgender, but I have short hair, and it really stresses people out. I went to a pub in Islington recently with some friends, and two things happened in really quick succession in this pub. First of all, I had to go pee, so as I often do. And I went into the loo, and there was a hen party in there, and they were wasted. And I walked in, and they were like, "What? Excuse me, this is the girls' toilet." And I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I am a girl." And then I went into the stall, and one of them knocked on the stall door and goes, "Excuse me, are you a lesbian?" And I was just silent, and then they started chanting "dyke" at me through the stall door. And they were sort of singing it like a football chant, and I got scared, and I was too scared to pee. I got stage fright, which is so rare for me. I can always pee. I'm peeing right now. And I left the bathroom, and they followed me out, and they sat at a nearby table, and they were all kind of still laughing, and one of them was taking pictures of me. And I didn't want to bring the mood down with my friends. We'd just arrived, but I guess I wanted to feel safe as well. So I put my arm around my friend Simon, and I put my head on his shoulder. And as soon as I did that, this guy walked by the table and went, "Fags." I couldn't believe it. So in the space of 2 minutes, I'd been called a dyke and a fag. That was quite an accomplishment in a way. I do understand that many people are experiencing a sense of vertigo from how quickly things seem to be evolving in the spheres of sexuality and gender. It's changing very quickly, and it can be difficult to keep up. There are acronyms as long as novels and new pronouns, and there can be a feeling that it's not okay to ask questions or to be confused. And then I think that leads to a kind of shutting down and just panicking and being frustrated. I remember having that same feeling of anger and panic when I was being taught algebra in year 7, because they just introduce it out of nowhere. And you know when you don't understand something as a kid and you get that kind of lump in your throat and you're like, "What? Excuse me? You're adding a letter to the number?" "I only just started understanding numbers." Why are you doing that? But the difference is I don't loudly declare algebra to be dangerous, perverted, and wrong, even though it clearly is. So yeah, toilet rights might not seem like the most pressing issue in the world, but moving backwards on this issue just emboldens a kind of unfounded homophobic hysteria. It's symbolic, and I know it's not about me, but I do know what it's like to feel a twinge of anxiety about a potential confrontation every time I try to urinate in a public place. I mean, not doing it in on the street. But nobody wants to be uncomfortable or make people uncomfortable. Everybody just wants to pee. Thanks a lot, guys.
So this week we saw the troublemaking capacity of those rebellious young upstarts in the House of Lords. Here to shine a light into this dusty corner of British life, we welcome back to The Now Show, Andy Zaltzman.
Thank you. Thanks. Quick news flash. The European Union has been undermining our democracy. That was one of the big Brexit beefs with our former continent, undermining our democracy. And every day at the moment, we see quite how valid a concern that is, because we in Britain, we are a nation that has a first-past-the-post electoral system that generates vast skewings of the public vote in Parliament. We have an unelected House of Lords based largely on a strange viral mutation of cronyism, and we have a monarch. If there is one activity we do not need any external help with, it is undermining our own democracy. Butt out, Brussels! Butt the sprout out! You would not kick Mozart out of his recording studio and say, I think I know how to lay down a piano track, Wolfgang. No. You wouldn't tell British Cycling how to forget something about a medicine. No. So leave it to the experts, Brussels. This is our gherkin, and we will jab it in our own eyeballs if we want to. Now, this week, Theresa May enjoyed her first parliamentary defeat after the House of Lords voted to amend the Article 50 bill to protect the rights of EU citizens living in the UK. Sorry, I misread that. They voted to ban Brexit, end all British democracy forever, and force every family in Britain to adopt at least one fully-fledged Bulgarian by the end of April. Sorry, I was reading the wrong newspaper. But this unnecessarily hot constitutional potato has been baked by the fact that fundamentally everyone involved in the Article 50 triggering process is winging it, making it up as they go along. And this is exactly how it should be. Now, some have criticised Theresa May for having no plan, but I think it just shows how deeply she respects British democracy. Because no one had put forward a plan for Brexit before the referendum. We voted for Brexit in full knowledge of the absence of any plan. If the Prime Minister suddenly finesses a coherent plan out of thin air, she would be contravening the democratic will of the people. Keep riffing, Mrs. M. It's exactly what we didn't vote you in to do. So the upshot of this week's vote is that House of Lords reform is literally all anyone is talking about in this country, in the pubs, clubs, and illegal donkey-fighting barns of Britain. That's all anyone's talking about. If we tune into any other radio programme now, I guarantee they will also be banging on about it. I've got a radio here. I'll just switch it on and whiz through the channels.
And the old girl simply pulled up her knickers, apologised, and climbed straight back into the burning helicopter.
That was Sir Hurstwhile Granch reading from his controversial new biography of the late Queen Victoria.
Okay, maybe not that channel. Try something else. No.
And now the classified football results with Charlotte Green.
Arsenal.
Redacted.
West Bromwich Albion.
Redacted.
Everton.
Redacted.
Middlesbrough.
Redacted.
God, I've never really understood why they have to be classified. I guess it'll all come out in 70 years' time or whatever. So let's try another one.
And that is how you turn a sausage back into a live pig.
Archbishop, thank you.
Okay, so, all right, well, maybe not everyone is talking about it, but the point is, if you were to start with a clean slate and were told to design a second chamber for a democracy-loving nation like Britain, a nation fanatically, almost erotically obsessed with the ballot paper, as we're told we are, and you came up with the current House of Lords, you would be politely told to seek help and go and take a long, hard cup of tea in the bath with yourself until you thought of something less bizarre. Our democracy is stuck in the past. Democracy should be constantly evolving. After all, in Britain, we are only 750-odd years into a 2,500-year trial scheme. Greece, just getting towards the end of theirs, and still needs a bit of fine-tuning. But we really need to modernise Parliament all round. So what are the options? Well, we could have an elected second chamber with, say, midterm elections proportionally voted for with scope for a non-political contingent of independently chosen experts. I know it sounds crazy, but it might just work. By which I mean, it does not sound crazy, and it probably won't work. Or failing that, to replace the House of Lords with this. A toy plastic squeaky lobster. Now, the House of Lobster would be even more efficient than Commons Plus One. It could be operated by the Deputy Prime Minister, whose current role is basically just to organise the Cabinet five-a-side football tournament and point and giggle at Jeremy Corbyn every now and again. Nice for him to have something to do. The Commons would simply say to the House of Lobster, one squeak for yes, two squeaks for no. Good boy. And that, it seems, is what many of our leading Democrats want our democracy to do. Which I think is a very selfish way to run the country. You're right, that was unacceptable. I'll put a couple of extra clauses in the legislation. Okay, point taken. Thanks for listening.
So, it seems that Kim Jong-nam, half-brother of Kim Jong-un and son of Kim Jong-il, has been assassinated in Malaysia by North Korean agents who duped two passers-by into doing it, thinking that they were taking part in a reality TV programme. But what led up to it, and what's going on in North Korea?
To help us find out the answers to these questions, would you please welcome North Korea expert, Guardian journalist and commissioning editor for Guardian World Networks, Maeve Shearlaw.
Thank you very much.
So what happened in this assassination? What threats did Kim Jong-nam pose to the regime then?
I mean, he was Kim Jong-un's half-brother. The two of them never met. But potentially, he could have been leader. The reason that he wasn't leader is that he fell out of favour with his father in 2001 by trying to get to Japan on a fake passport because he wanted to go to Disneyland, which embarrassed the North Korean regime.
Why would that embarrass the North Korean regime?
I mean, yeah, that's a very good question. But it's kind of the antithesis of North Korean propaganda. The threat of Kim Jong-nam and Kim Jong-un's eyes was always there. He was abroad. He was living in Macau, which is a territory of China. He was kind of outspoken sometimes about the hereditary system of the Kim family. And Kim Jong-un had wanted him out of the way.
What annoyed them?
I think that what annoyed Kim Jong-un is that he was out there. Unlike a lot of North Koreans, he was multilingual. He travelled around. He was able to have conversations. He had a Facebook page where he'd share pictures of swish dinners and his dogs and his lifestyle. So he was a perceived threat.
Would North Koreans have been able to see his Facebook page? I mean, how much would they have known of what he was saying?
Well, so there was a piece I read from a defector the other day that said it's very likely, actually, that only about 1% of people in North Korea really knew about Kim Jong-nam, because he's not part of the kind of propaganda. So most North Koreans only get their information through a drip feed of what the state wants to tell them. And what the state wants to tell them is that Kim Jong-un is their amazing leader, that he has no threats.
You talk about how only 1% of North Koreans have got access to information. How do you deal with that? Well, sort of attempts are made to do that.
Well, there's various ways that you can do that. There are lots of South Korean activists that broadcast radio signals across the border so that people can kind of tune into them and try and put across a kind of anti-government message. And there's also a group of South Korean activists who fly information attached to helium balloons across the border as well.
Really?
So that can be USB sticks. And today they pledged to fly information about Kim Jong-nam across the border.
Do you think they plug in the USB sticks, or they just breathe in the helium and talk in very high voices?
Yeah, they probably do that. And then when they come round, they've said about Kim Jong-nam is that they're going to put pictures of him slumped over at the airport and also carry it with messages that Kim Jong-un is a murderer.
Is Kim Jong-un keeping the country exactly as it was, or is he instituted market reforms?
A lot of people say he's actually worse than his father in some ways, in the way that he's cracking down on people in his random executions, in that kind of tyranny over the people. On the other hand, what he has done is kind of allowed a certain kind of market reform. So there's kind of pockets of people who are allowed to run their own businesses. People talk of seeing kind of Hello Kitty backpacks on the streets of Pyongyang. There's more cars there than there have been before. So it's a two-pronged approach, really. So the country is kind of getting slightly richer than it was. There was kind of a devastating famine during the 90s, which has taken this long to recover from. But actually, the economy is getting better. Of course, that has a trickle-down effect in some ways, and it makes people's lives better. The elite in Pyongyang can go to European restaurants. They drive kind of nicer cars. But at the same time, if you're caught with a South Korean DVD or a computer, could face kind of life in prison.
Amazing insights into a rather extraordinary country. Thank you very much, Maeve Shearlaw. Next, please welcome to the show, singer and impressionist so good that nobody's noticed she's been me for the whole show, Jess Robinson.
Hello. So, we've just come out of the awards season. In the last couple of weeks, we've had the Brits and the Grammys, where big awards went to megastar women like Beyoncé and Adele and Little Mix. But these are female singers with songs about being strong and independent and picking yourself up after you've had your heart broken. It was really inspiring viewing, but every time the adverts came on in between, it really reminded me that the attitudes of people making these ads still have a long way to go. So what would happen if Beyoncé, Adele and Little Mix all sung about the stuff advertising execs think women are all about?
Uh-oh, 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 Omega.
I'm up to duck, can't get enough, got twins in my tummy, you see. Speaking as a mother, already have another, I'm a busy mom of three. Ain't no small thing, home schedule. Got one small tip before you trip. Why don't you be more like B? With a healthy, balanced diet as a compliment, try omega 3 and calcium supplements. Now put your hands up.
Hello, do you feel like you're sluggish and you're bloated after every single meal? Takes a toll on your mood when you feel as though you're carrying a handbag full of food. Constipation slows me down, it turns my smile into a frown, because I'm a woman, this is what we do. Cause no man has struggle to poo.
Hey look, I'm a girl who sells things on TV. I'm an angel in heaven, cause I'm eating low-fat cream cheese. And even though it's high in calories, I'm filleting a chocolate bar because I'm oh so naughty. Have a bowl of fruit and nuts and multigrain, three kinds of goodness for my feeble female brain. I'm into diets, makeup, health and being a mom. And when I'm not doing that, I'm only there to stop a man having fun.
So there you go. Thank you very much indeed for those, ladies and gentlemen. And indeed, thank you for listening. And goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Funk, Hugh Dennis, Mae Martin, Andy Zaltzman, Jess Robinson, Luke Kempner and Maeve Shearlaw. It was written by the cast with additional material from John Hunter, Benjamin Partridge, Catherine Bohart, Jenny LaVille and Robin Morgan. Musical arrangement was by Lawrence Owen. The producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.